Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills?
Or a newbie looking to become one?
You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hey guys, it's Sarah here. Welcome to Where Should I Invest Canada. This is all about investing in Canada. Today we have Charles Waugh who will be joining us. This guy's incredible. He is 30 years old. He does land development. He has some buy and hold properties. He's looking into so many other things. So he really does it all. The area that we're going to focus on today is Hamilton, Ontario, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. A lot has changed since the past even 5 years in Hamilton. Charles is going to give us some updates on that, bring us up to speed, and tell you what he is currently doing. All right. Let's welcome Charles.
Thanks, Charles, for joining the Where Should I Invest podcast, and welcome to the show.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm really excited to have you on the show today. You are a very good friend of mine and also a very successful investor. You've been doing this for a little while now, and do you mind telling people how old you are?
I'm 30 years old.
That's amazing. So can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm born and raised in Hamilton. I'm a full-time real estate entrepreneur. My business is based in Hamilton, and what I focus primarily on is land development. We have a couple sites where we're proposing 46 townhouse units and 117 townhouse units, and what I do is I get raw land, I obtain approvals, and then sell off to a builder. My next step is to actually try into getting some building with some small developments, like building one house or a row of townhouses.
So how did you decide to do that instead of just buying a house or a duplex or something else?
You know what? It's something that I was always interested in. I just like the kind of the creative process of development where you can take raw land and then you can transform it into something of higher and better use. And kind of you're in control of, you know, what you're going to do with it. So I kind of always liked that. And back in 2013, before I was a computer engineer, and then our office shut down. And at that point, I thought it would be a good opportunity while, you know, I'm young and don't have too many commitments to just jump into development. I had no knowledge or experience, and my family didn't either. And it was literally just diving off into the deep end.
That's pretty crazy. Did people say that?
Oh, absolutely. There's not many resources to learn about land development. So like I said, I just jumped in and started doing it and learning as I went. However, looking back, I made a lot of mistakes because I was learning development on the fly.
Can we talk about those?
Absolutely. Like at the beginning, so I didn't have a team. I didn't know what I was doing. I basically didn't know what a team consisted of. And I didn't know kind of the steps in the development process. So again, I was just kind of playing it by ear. I was fortunate that I was able to find a piece of land next to one of my parents' existing rental properties where the owner had a few acres of raw land. And after a few months of negotiations, we were able to reach a deal. And actually, during those negotiations, I didn't even know what I was doing. Like, what made the deal possible was a vendor take back. And that's where the seller offers financing to you. They're basically the bank. If it wasn't for that, there's no way, like I didn't have the capital or my family didn't have the capital to purchase that land. So that vendor take back made it possible. And I'm fortunate that that landowner, who is a seniors couple, was willing to work together with me.
How did you even come across them? Like, how did you find them?
You know what? Honestly, the day after I told my family, like my parents and my brother, that I want to become a developer, literally the next day, that neighbor called us and asked us if we were interested in buying their land. And we had never met them before or anything.
Wow.
My parents had that rental property for like 10 years. So I guess everything happens for a reason because it happened right after that. And it kind of started from there. And one thing I didn't mention before was I'd been working on the development. Like after we purchased that property, I started assembling a team and working through dealing with the city to get the right plans, reports, and studies that were needed for the application. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, there was a lot of mistakes because I didn't know the different steps. So I found I was doing steps in the wrong order. I wasted just a lot of time and money at the beginning. One of the biggest milestones and that really, really helped propel the project was partnering together with a local builder. And now whenever I talk to people and that are interested in getting development, I always recommend that they should either find a builder to partner together with or find a mentor that has already had development experience so that they learn from them and don't make the same mistakes. And education is so important. They need to know the right team, the right steps. So it wasn't until I really found the builder partner, it was, I think, like 8 or 10 months later after we started, that I realized I was doing so many things backwards. And again, partnering together with a builder, it helped to really expedite the process, because not only did they expedite the development process of the projects, they helped my learning process expedite by providing mentorship.
So obviously finding that right person locally, how did you come across them actually?
I was born and raised in Hamilton, so I'm familiar in terms of like the names of the builders. So I really just reached out and tried to meet with them. So I met with a bunch of them, and one of them turned out to be a great fit. I was fortunate that they were willing to take me on, because I was going into these offices like as a young guy, you know, no experience. It definitely was very daunting. I came in thinking that I didn't really have anything to lose. And I also came in thinking that I believed that I was bringing something of value, whereby I had a piece of land that we'd already closed on and it was a good location. And because there's a lack of developable land, especially in Ancaster, Hamilton, where I live, I thought that I was adding value to builders where we could partner together. I can go through the development. They can kind of mentor me. And then at the end, they would be able to purchase the lots and build homes.
So at one point, I think before that was happening, I mean, this is a riskier type of investment if you don't know what you're doing, but it sounds like you definitely came out ahead and, you know, gained a lot of experience from it. It is something where you're not necessarily making money. You're probably putting a lot of money into the process, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the unfortunate thing about development is that it's always cash outflows. Like you're constantly injecting money into the project, and then you don't make money until the end, and that's if it's profitable. So there's definitely more risks involved with development compared to, for instance, the traditional single family home where you just rent it out. But obviously, with more risk comes more potential reward. So you do need to be careful and plan accordingly. You need to be able to budget and make sure that you don't run out of capital like midway through the project. Because even if you have a really good project, if you don't have the cash flow, then the project's done. Like the cash flow is the heir to any business and it's needed. So, I mean, you do need to be very careful with your budgeting and planning.
So how did you manage to do that?
To be honest, at the beginning, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. I really, to be honest, just played it by ear. I mean, I consider myself very fortunate. I didn't know how to do all the planning and budgeting. We really just kind of kept playing it by ear and like just hoping for the best. I just kind of believed that I could be successful, and I just took it a step at a time.
You have some other properties, right, that you buy for cash flow?
Yeah, so that's right. So in my business, I have kind of two sides. One's the development side and the other side's in the investments. So with our rental properties, which we own with joint venture partners, the cash flow from our rental properties we're able to use towards our developments. We kind of have different strategies. And even within investments, which we can talk about at some point on this call, we have different strategies. Like for instance, rent to own would be more of a short term, where they may buy out in a few years. And then that would get, I like that because that helps us give us some short-term capital to be able to inject into our developments. Obviously, I am a long-term investor. Like I prefer the long-term holds, but I need some of those shorter-term strategies like rent-to-own to be able to make some of that cash to put into developments.
Obviously, you don't want to just put all your eggs in one basket. Even real estate can be diversified, right?
Absolutely, exactly. With the different strategies within real estate and even geographic. Like I prefer to be a geographic specialist. So I like to specialize in Hamilton for various reasons. If you wanted to mitigate your risk, you could diversify and go in different places if you wanted to.
Right. No, exactly. So you did mention one thing that I thought was interesting with the city and all the different steps and the permits. I know this is not necessarily a call on development specifically, but I definitely want to touch a little bit on it if you're okay with just saying, okay, so you have this piece of the land and let's just say you bought it, you did the vendor take back. What are the steps based on what you've learned of what you should do first and the kind of timeframes? Are you able to go through a little bit of that?
Sure. I'll go through it briefly and high level.
Sure.
If anyone wants to talk further, they can always contact me afterwards. But basically, after you find a parcel of land, and actually, I have a presentation that people can download that goes through everything in terms of like what to look for and all that. But assuming, you know, you've already
found... Where would they find that presentation?
Actually, you can download it right now on my website, which I'm working on. The only thing on it right now is the download link. And the website is gatewaygroup.ca.
Perfect. We'll add that to the show notes.
So I'm not going to go through everything, but assuming you found that parcel, which may or may not be purchased already, it could just be tied up and you could be doing due diligence. Your next step would be to go to the city. You want to talk to the planning department. Talk to them about your proposal. Or even if you don't even have a proposal yet, you kind of talk to them. What's possible with that land? What can you build? And I always recommend that people should also talk to a private planner as well, because they will be able to help you go through what is the highest and best use case of that land. And then from there, when you get that feedback, you can then decide whether it's worthwhile to proceed with the development or not. Obviously, another thing to check, which you'll do in conjunction kind of with talking to the planners, is checking the zoning. The zoning is extremely important. The zoning of a land dictates kind of what's possible to build on it now. You can rezone it, but again, you have to weigh the pros and cons because it's a lengthier process if you need to rezone. While you're checking zoning, you also want to look at the official plan of the city. And the official plan is what the city's vision of how they want their lands to be built. So typically, you want a proposal that's more in line with what they want in the official plan and zoning so that you have less roadblocks and challenges.
Wow.
And then so after you get feedback from the city, if you decide to go forward from there, there's something called a formal consultation where they give you formal comments, like written comments. And then after, if you decide to proceed from there, that's when you actually complete the reports, plans, and studies, submit your development application, and then proceed from there towards construction if you get approvals. So it's a very high level overview of kind of the stages. So that's how you would get started.
That does sound very complicated to somebody that has not done it before, but timelines, like are you looking at 6 months? Is this more of a 2-year project?
From start to finish, obviously it's very dependent on what you're proposing, the municipality and your site specific. But in general, I tell people that a typical project will take roughly 3 to 5 years from start to completion.
Wow. So it is important that you do have some other cash flow coming in, whether it's from other properties and whatnot.
Absolutely. And like, you know, at the beginning, the investment isn't as much. For instance, at the beginning period, when you're doing your due diligence, it's next to nothing. Like it doesn't cost you anything to check the zoning, look at the official plan, go into the city, talk to the planner. None of that costs money. It's not until, even at the formal consultation stage, that's typically around $1,000. And okay. It gets credited to you if you decide to proceed with the development applications. But you don't really start investing money until you start the reports, plans, and studies. And at that point, hopefully you already have like a good confidence level that your proposal is supported by the city. And of course, you find that out through your discussions with the city planners and through the city formal consultation process.
And it takes a lot of courage to go into it and learn it once you're in it. So congratulations on that. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I'm glad that it turned out well at the end with them buying the rest of the project and building on it. Awesome. So you're in Hamilton for the most part, correct?
Yes.
And I think you have maybe one in St. Catharines?
Yes. I'm looking at St. Catharines, both Hamilton and St. Catharines. I prefer Hamilton because I know it so well. I was born and raised here again, like I said. But Hamilton's gone up like crazy, as like you and pretty much the whole world knows. It's all over the media. So I always try to stay creative. And, you know, if it's really hard to find places in Hamilton to purchase for investment properties, then you need to look elsewhere because this is what I do. This is my business. So I've started looking, expanded and learning more about St. Catharines as well, and got my first rental property in St. Catharines early this year.
Congrats.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about Hamilton and just the market specifics. And obviously you're from there, you're born and raised there, but there's probably some other things that attracted you to that market. What are some of the fundamentals that attracted you to Hamilton?
Oh yeah, for sure. So like, even though I'm from here and know it very well, it's not the main reason why I chose to invest in Hamilton. Like, there's a lot of other reasons. Like, for instance, there's the population growth, job growth. It's just overall a very exciting time right now in Hamilton. You have the revitalization of Hamilton downtown. There's tons of development happening downtown. The city of Hamilton, for building permits, there's been over $1 billion in building permits for 6 of the previous 7 years.
Wow.
And it's just, it's a cool place to be now. A lot of people didn't have this view even like 7, 5, 10 years ago. But now people come here. There's a lot of cool new restaurants, coffee shops, bars. Like I said, there's job growth. There's a lot of new businesses. So it's interesting because when I was growing up, a lot of my friends had to move to Toronto to work. And what's really cool now is that a lot of people are able to stay here, or you get people from other cities even coming in here to live and work, which is really cool. Like, I mean, yeah, some people talk about Hamilton being like a bedroom community, but
right.
I don't believe in that. I think there's equally, like, there's people outside coming into here versus people in Hamilton commuting out. As like the Golden Horseshoe, like there's more and more transportation with like the GO and all that, everything's interconnected. So there's going to be people from Burlington, Toronto, Hamilton going out and about. So hopefully it's equal where, you know, you have residents going out to work and same with people coming into work. So I think that's one of the biggest changes with Hamilton, is that you're starting to see a lot more people live and work here, which is cool.
Wow, that's right. It's definitely not what it used to be, like you said, 7 to 10 years ago. And sometimes it still has that stigma, but it has really, really improved. I want to say it's like Parkdale in Toronto, what, 10 years ago, and now it's the trendy spot. So I'm not invested personally in Hamilton. I'm in Brantford. So can you talk about like maybe the areas that are better than others for investing, the areas to avoid? Like, are you able to share a little bit of that?
Yeah, for sure. So it really depends on what strategies you prefer. And I always tell people, you got to think about who is your tenant / customer profile. Like, what are you looking for? So for instance, I cater to families. So I prefer to invest in the Hamilton Mountain. And for those who don't know, there's the Hamilton Mountain, there's Hamilton Downtown. Downtown is like the cool and hip place to be right now. And that's where you'll find a lot of the millennials. So if your tenant profile, if you prefer millennials and young professionals, then downtown could be better, or it is better because there's more things to do down there. That's where like the restaurants, bars and shops and a lot of cool stuff happening down there, and the waterfront as well. Whereas for instance, for me, I target mainly families. So I prefer on the mountain where you have like the larger lots, you've got the backyards, families love that. And in the Hamilton Mountain, they're split up into different neighborhoods where each neighborhood will have parks and schools. So the mountain's very conducive to families, and it's perfect for what I'm looking for in my investing strategies.
You said it bang on. Different people will have different tenant profiles that they want to go after. And so for you, it was the families. You might have somebody that wants to go after young professionals. You might have some people that want to do more of a short-term furnished rental. Like, there's lots of different things. So for you, you're doing long-term buy and hold, and you're trying to rent to families that want to stay there, I guess, and raise their kids, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I know other investors in a lot of other investors in Hamilton, and there's all different strategies. There's people that invest in apartment buildings and are successful in Hamilton. There are people that invest in like single-family homes, long-term holds like I do, and they're on the mountain. I know some people that do Airbnb in downtown, and they're very successful with it. So Hamilton has a lot of different opportunities for different real estate strategies.
That's perfect. I mean, without necessarily telling us exactly what you make on each house, like what was the house worth roughly and what can you get them for now when you, you know, buying when you did and then I guess now? And then what do the average rents look like when, you know, you're renting to a family up in the mountain?
So most of the properties that we purchased were from 2 years ago or so, two and a half years ago. And back then the prices were like around $300,000 for the typical, like what I look for in a single family home is the typical 3-bed, 2-bathroom house. And so back then,
I think that's important.
Why is that?
Do you look for,
I look for the 3-bedroom, 2-bath because I find it's like the highest in demand. For instance, if I did a rent to own or even a straight rent, if the existing tenant is to leave, how desirable is that place for other tenants? And I find that I wouldn't get a place with less than 3 bedrooms. I find that it's just not in, as high in demand. And also, I always look at plan B, plan C. So in the worst case, if I, for some reason, wanted to sell, then what is the demand in terms of resellability? And I know that 3 bedrooms is a lot more desirable than 2 bedrooms. So if I was to resell it, it's going to command a premium over smaller places. And same with bathrooms. Like, you just think about in a family, like, if, would you rather have 2 bathrooms or... I find that 1 bathroom is typically not enough. 2 bathrooms is much better. It all comes down to desirability
and demand. Supply
and demand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Supply and demand is huge. I don't know if it's like for you the same, but for Brantford, and I'm exactly with you too, with the 3 bedrooms plus. Now, where do you find this demand? Like, how do you figure out what people are looking for? How do you even, you know, begin if you're going into a new town or somebody that doesn't know Hamilton, like how would you even know people are looking for 3 bedrooms?
I guess the first thing that I would do is just talk to other investors. And I always tell people that they should go out to meetup events, go out there, engage, go to networking events, join different groups, and talk to investors that are currently investing in that city that you want to go into and ask them like kind of what are the average rents, what are the tenants looking for? And then once you get in, then obviously you'll be able to tell from actually filling your properties. You'll be able to tell how much demand there is for your place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I do that you might also do is go on Kijiji. Kijiji helps a ton. If you've got a city that has its own page, you can actually look at the wanted ads or you can take a look and see how long, you know, certain house with a certain number of bedrooms is staying on the market and how many views it has.
Oh, that's a great point. I forgot to mention that. I definitely look at Kijiji and I'll look at what my competitors are priced at and what the market's like. Another good resource is padmapper.com.
Yeah.
And padmapper.com basically aggregates and takes listings from Kijiji and all the different sites. And it's like a map view and you can see all the different listings and kind of what's the rent they're asking and what the house is like. So that really helps when you're either trying to find out like market rents or you're trying to just do like a competitive analysis and look what other people are priced at.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome.
And by the way, so, going back to your question before, I didn't finish it where...
No, that's okay. Go for it.
You're talking about the prices. So
and the rents,
2.5 years ago or so, we purchased these homes for about $300,000. They're now over $450,000. The most of ours, they're over $450,000. So I think it's time to have a refinance, actually.
Yeah.
They definitely can be refinanced at this point. Yeah, they've gone up a ton. And honestly, I wouldn't have predicted that the market would have gone up this much. So last year in Hamilton, the appreciation was 20%.
Wow.
20%.
That's, you would have thought in Hamilton, you know?
I would have never dreamed that. Obviously, that's not sustainable.
No.
It's nice to have, but it's not sustainable. In 2015, it was 10%, which is more, I mean, it's not as crazy as 20, but even 10% is really high. If you look historically, yeah. I think it's closer to like 3, 4, 5 versus like these double digit return appreciation rates. So we've been very fortunate here in Hamilton, as well as a lot of other cities in Ontario. As you know, real estate's gone up a lot, like across many Golden Horseshoe cities, or all across Golden Horseshoe, but Hamilton's, I think, really benefited from a lot of that job growth and population growth, like I mentioned.
Yeah, it's definitely gone a lot. And I think the other thing, too, is, you know, you can't buy and predict that it's always going to go up 10 or 20%. So I recommend, you know, estimate 3%, and sometimes it'll be more, sometimes it'll be less, but at least it's just kind of a safe bet, because that's not, appreciation is great as gravy. And those of us that have been in the market have definitely benefited well from it, but it's definitely not something you or I would advise new investors to bank on.
Yeah. So I personally never rely on appreciation in real estate. As obviously, you know, there's three profit centers. There's the cash flow, the monthly cash flow. There's the mortgage pay down. And then, I mean, you can say the appreciation as well. I don't bank on it. I view it, I forget where I heard this from, but I always consider it like this, where your cash flow is like your dessert. Your mortgage pay down is like your main course meal. And then the appreciation is like your dessert.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, did I just say that the cash flow is dessert? The cash flow is the appetizer. If I said that wrong.
Yeah.
I think I just got that mixed up. The appetizer is the cash flow. That starts. You don't start with dessert.
No, that's true. Good point. You know what? In my head, I knew what you were saying. And I think I've heard you say it before too. So, but yeah, if there's no cash flow, I mean, that's not something that I'm willing to speculate on just to see if things are going to go up 20%. And it sounds like you're not either.
No, me neither. Exactly.
So what are some of the rents? Obviously, we're capped as landlords on how much we can raise the rent each year, and it gets basically told to us and that's it. But, you know, if you don't have a tenant and you bought, you know, 3 years ago, you know, or when you bought your properties even 2 years ago, like what were the market rents? And then if you were to buy something now, what do you see out there in terms of average rents for what you have in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath?
So a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, the average rent or the market rent was typically around $1,650 to $1,700 plus utilities.
Okay.
And then now it's $1,800, $1,850. So,
wow.
I mean, it's gone up steadily. It's not huge, but it's definitely gone up. And I see this across the board. I mean, I've purchased properties since 2-3 years ago. And every time I get a property, it's just the rents seem to creep up by like $25 and goes up from there. So I, again, like you said, I look at Kijiji and I talk to other investors though, because I always say you should go out and join those networking groups.
Yeah.
And they're so helpful. They're honestly invaluable. I talk to other investors like yourself and I just ask them kind of, hey, what rents are you guys getting? And then I figure out from there.
Yeah, I mean, that is really important too, because that's how you're going to do your numbers and your cash flow. And so you want to get a good idea. Now, you are talking, like you said, to other investors and they're also investing in Hamilton. How long does property, you know, of the type that you have stay on the market before it gets rented out if one of your tenants were to move out or you were to buy one?
So in Hamilton, the vacancy rate is really tight. I don't know the exact number, but I think it's less than 3%. So I mean, we're pretty fortunate here because of it's the tight rental market. I found it pretty easy to rent out my places. I typically am able to fill my vacant properties within 1 to 2 months. Most of mine are within like a month and a half. I think the longest I ever took was 2 months.
Okay. And then how many showings was that and how much interest did you get and how did you advertise?
Some I've done on the very first showing. I mainly advertise on Kijiji. I find it's very effective in Hamilton.
Right.
And I've even filled some places before I even closed. I know you're the queen of that. You're the best. People have got to learn from you how to do that. I've done that, I think, once or twice where I was able to fill a place before closing, and it definitely feels very good.
Yes, it does. Okay, so that's good. And then, you know, your tenants, obviously you're renting to families. Like, this podcast is also for people that are starting out. So what kind of issues have you had? Like, have you had any leaks, any, I'm sure, like appliances, like those are very common. Like what kind of, like, what's a, you know, the worst thing that happened in terms of not your development piece, but just your properties that you have that cash flow?
I've been pretty fortunate actually. So our places, I haven't had any surprises. I haven't had many major issues. So like when I got my places, I got inspections done. So I knew when, for instance, a roof would need to be replaced in a few years time. So we already kind of planned and budgeted for that. I haven't had any major surprises, which is I'm very fortunate about. Of course, you have issues that you have to deal with as any landlord. Like things will come up with tenants. They may have certain repair requests or they may have issues paying the rent a month. They might be late or something like that. But honestly, overall, I've been very fortunate with both our tenants as well as our properties in terms of the repairs and maintenance. Nothing really surprising. And to that point, I think one of the most important things about for real estate investing is finding the right tenant. I can't stress right. enough that people, you need to spend the time. Very important to find the right tenant. You want to screen them. You want to take the time to screen them. You want to get, you get them fill the application forms. And then from there, for me, I always ask for the credit report, letter of employment, T4. Oh, I already said letter of employment. But yeah, so I want to be able to analyze their, and two most recent pay stubs. Because I want to be able to basically verify what they've written on their application is accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important. Now, do you pull the credit reports or do you ask them to bring it?
I ask them to bring it and or pull it. Like, first of all, when I first show to people, they don't bring anything. I find people have different strategies. Some people want higher requirements at the beginning. They'll ask for them to bring it. I find that if you ask for too many things up front, it scares off a lot of people. They won't even come see your place. So I don't ask for anything. I have people come through and then they fill an application. And then I look through the leads, and then I will ask maybe the top few to take the next step to send me the documentation.
Okay, that's good. And then I'm assuming that you're also calling the landlords, the past landlords and all that stuff as well?
Yeah, that's right. I'll call the past landlords. Sometimes I'll call the previous, because sometimes, remember, they'll ask their friend to be that landlord. So actually, sometimes what I'll do is I'll ask them, hey, when I'm asking their landlord, I'll ask them, hey, so I've been told by this person that their rent is $1,650 or something like that. And then if they say, oh, yeah, whatever, like you intentionally say like an incorrect number. And if they don't correct you, then you know that they're faking it. It's not the real landlord.
That's a great tip, actually. That is amazing. I've also heard you could say, oh, I heard that so-and-so was employed at this company for 2 years. And if it's like their manager, the number of the employment you call and you're like, maybe they were employed for 6 months, and you can always exaggerate that as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really important to scrutinize. And your job is to verify that application, what they filled out on there, is accurate. And so if it takes doing stuff like people can get very creative.
Yeah.
So you just want to be very careful and diligent when you're screening tenants.
Absolutely. Do you ever do social media checks as well?
I haven't actually.
Go on Facebook?
No, I haven't. Maybe I should.
That's one of the things I do. And I didn't always do it, but after a while I started to, because you want to see what they're actually doing, if they're family people, if they're big partiers, if their family is important, they might have their family. Again, please don't write to me and say, well, this and that. But most of the time their story will check out on Facebook.
True. That's true. Honestly, I know the numbers are very important, but I use gut feel a lot. Accepted some people who looked terrible on paper, but they were upfront with me right when I met them. They were really nice and they said, hey, I want to let you know right up front that our credit reports aren't good. They're actually quite bad. But then they had a story of why that happened. And those people, some of them have become some of my best tenants. Just because someone has their application may not look so good, you need to still, you can maybe dig in and find out why. And obviously, you need to ensure that they can afford the rent. You don't want to put them in a bad position. Kind of the interview process is for them to see the place and to get to know you, and you to get to know them. It's both ways. You want to make sure that they're a good fit, and they want to make sure that the place is a good fit for their family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important. And for me too, I have tenants and they don't necessarily have the best credit, and it's not all about that, but it's so much more important to get the references, in my opinion, about the landlord, the past landlord, and like you said, the past landlord, if you can, because obviously the present landlord, whether they're good or bad, they may decide to stretch the truth or lie.
Especially if they're trying to get rid of that current tenant, right?
Exactly. Or if they're angry and they don't want them to leave, they'll be like, yeah, they're terrible, so they can keep them longer.
Exactly. So they could have vested interest one way or the other.
So, I take that one with a grain of salt, but then the past ones previously usually don't have the reason to lie or to stretch the truth. Yeah, that's really cool. So right now, let's just say somebody wants to go and look at Hamilton and they like your idea of renting to families, kind of lower maintenance. How do you find deals now and how do you know when to jump on a deal and what does the market look like?
I would advise beginners to find a really good realtor. They could be a very invaluable resource first, they could act as kind of like your mentor and kind of help you teach you, but they'll be kind of your source to find good properties. They know what they're looking for. You want to find a realtor who specializes in the location that you're looking to invest in, because they'll know the inside and outs. They'll know everything about the area. So I think a realtor is an invaluable resource. Obviously, you can also look for off-market deals, but if you're just starting, that may not be the easiest, especially since I find with a lot of the for sale by owners, the owners are trying to sell at market or even I've seen at like higher prices. And there's really not a discount where, you know, traditionally you think that when people sell for sale by owner privately, you think that they would share the savings of not having to pay commissions. But I found that a lot of people don't, and they price it at market or higher. But then even more importantly for new investors, they don't really know what they're looking for. They don't know what to ask. They don't know what to look for in the house. They may not know how to negotiate with directly with the seller. That's why I think, especially for at the beginning, I think getting a good realtor on your team is key.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I second that for sure. Hamilton has bidding wars now, and you know, you've got potentially 5-10 people on a house. Is that still happening?
It is, unfortunately. It's tough to get the inventory. But the thing is, after the new policies, that fair housing plan from the provincial government and the tight, like the foreign buyer tax, that has obviously kind of shooken up the market. That goes all over Ontario, not just Hamilton.
Yeah.
I mean, things are still selling for high. It's still a seller's market, don't get me wrong. But now, instead of having, let's say a place had like 10, 15 different offers, now you might have 3 to 5 instead of 10 to 15. So there's less competition right now. I actually think right now is a good buying opportunity. I think what's happening right now is buyers are in a pause and wait state.
Okay.
But what I think is that in a short period of time, maybe let's say 6 months, the market is just going to resume as normal, like before. It's just going to pick up and continue onward. This is exactly what happened in Vancouver. After they had the foreign buyer tax, the market pulled back for 6 months. But then after that short period, that kind of pause and wait state, buyers said, well, wait a second, this is not really that big a deal. The market continued onward, and now they're at like record highs again. So I think, I personally think that's what's going to happen here in Ontario and in Hamilton. So I think that right now is actually a good buying opportunity.
Yeah, and I will second that. So a lot of people think that real estate is so risky and it's speculative, but you're a cash flow investor as I am. And to be honest, when we're buying, and this is a long-term play, just like you're looking at these as long-term opportunities, we don't mind a little bit of a downturn because it just allows us to buy at better options, right? It's just like when the stock market goes down, everybody gets out of the market. Well, that's the best time to buy.
Absolutely. So
over time, it goes up.
Exactly. So as, you know, strategic investors, you want to be able to profit whether the market goes up, down, or sideways.
Right.
And if you're investing in cash flowing properties for the long term, like you and I, then it doesn't really matter how the market fluctuates, as long as, you know, we're getting cash flow every month. And like you said, if the market goes down and our properties are still cash flowing, yeah, it sucks that your property value is going down, but at the same time, now it represents an opportunity if you have some cash. And I always recommend that you shouldn't invest fully. You should always have some cash on the side, so such that if there is a correction or some opportunities come up, then you're able to take advantage of that. And so if the market, you know, takes a correction, then you can possibly buy new and add to your portfolio.
No, that's a great point. You definitely want to have that cash on hand because those are the times to buy for the deal.
Exactly.
So where do you see yourself? Are you still buying now in Hamilton? Are you going to St. Catharines, looking at that a little bit more?
I'm always trying to buy. I'm definitely looking in both Hamilton and St. Catharines actively right now. Actually, I have kind of a piece of land right now under contract in St. Catharines with my friend Andy Tran.
Okay.
We're looking to do a small development out there.
Very cool.
It's two adjacent properties with a single and a duplex on there, which is cool because we're planning to, like, somebody could, if they wanted to, knock those down and then build a row of townhouses. But I told Andy to mitigate our risk. We should just keep the existing two homes, renovate them, rent them out, And then that will give us some cash flow. And at the same time, work on severing the back, because these are kind of large, very deep lots. So we can sever the back and try to build a house. So that would be my kind of first foray into building, which would be
very
really cool.
And that's a good person to have on your team as well.
Exactly. So even with that, I'm still looking both in Hamilton and St. Catharines. I prefer Hamilton. Hamilton's still my number one. As I mentioned, most of my portfolio is in Hamilton, and I believe in it. Hamilton's farther ahead than St. Catharines. Now, I do believe in St. Catharines, though. I think that St. Catharines could be the next Hamilton, especially with the planning to go through St. Catharines all the way to Niagara Falls, I believe in 2020. So there's a lot of exciting things happening in St. Catharines, gone up a lot, but I'm looking at both Hamilton and St. Catharines.
So if people wanted to reach out to you, where could they find you?
So I'm currently working on my website. I know right now it's just like a landing page where you can download the presentation. But if you want to go there, again, it's gatewaygroup.ca. You can sign up on there with your email, and I'll give updates when I actually launch the full website. They can also email me at charles.wah@gatewaygroup.ca. And that email address also listed on the website if you didn't get this one for some reason.
Very cool. The reason I'm saying that is you mentioned joint ventures. So you're open to working with others, sounds
yes,
like?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we have joint venture partners that we work together with right now. And yes, we're always open to working together with other joint venture partners as well.
Excellent. Good. So the next little part of the podcast is called the lightning round questions. And I'm just going to ask you some quick questions and just give me an answer. You can elaborate a little bit on it if you want, but this is going to allow people to get to know you a little bit better. You ready?
Awesome. Sounds good.
Okay. What's your favorite real estate investing book?
So it's not specifically real estate investing, but it's an all-time classic, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. It kind of got me, well, I've always been interested in business and real estate. But that one is kind of like a really fundamental book. So I highly recommend everyone interested in business in general and or real estate to read that one.
Very cool. Yeah, great, great book. That's the one that really gets people thinking differently.
Absolutely.
And if you can read that, the younger you are, the better. And then it just really changes your mindset. What about your favorite podcast?
I really like my good friend Erwin Zito's The Truth About Real Estate Investing for Canadians, as well as Patrick Francie's The Everyday Millionaire podcast. Both of these podcasts, they have tremendous value. They have great guests and a lot of good information on both podcasts. Actually, now that we're talking about Erwin Zito, he's Mr. Hamilton. So if anyone is looking to purchase in Hamilton, and as I mentioned before, one thing I recommend would be one key member of your team is the realtor. Erwin Zito's Mr. Hamilton team is unbelievable. I can't stress how important they've been in my business. Erwin Zito, James Maggs, and the guys on that team. Yeah, they've done so much. I can't thank them enough, and I highly recommend them to others. And Patrick Francie, who's the CEO at RAIN, Real Estate Investment Network. RAIN has been a fabulous resource as well. It's a network where, I mean, there's so much good information. You learn and you get to network with other like-minded individuals. It's just a very powerful group, and I highly recommend that to anybody looking to get out and learn and network with real estate investors.
Yeah, that's both great guys and a very, very good point. Networking, like you mentioned, is definitely up there in the things that you should do to get started to move things and move things in the right direction. What about your favorite pastime? So other than real estate, what do you like to do for fun?
Oh, I love to stay active. I love active lifestyle. So CrossFit, I've always done traditional weightlifting, but I started CrossFit, I think like 6-7 months ago, and I absolutely love it. Soccer, I love sports. Soccer is my favorite. And I recently started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is grappling. It's a lot of fun.
I have to go see you doing that. That sounds funny.
Oh my God, I hope I don't get choked out. I'm just a beginner. There's so much to learn. With these things like CrossFit and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, these are new things for me, and there's just so much to learn. And I love challenges and a lot of fun learning and growing at the same time.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're a very big advocate too for work-life balance, right? So you do a lot of different sports, you still work hard, and I would say like you're a great example of that.
Oh, thanks. Actually, that's a huge point. I think work-life balance is really, really, really important. And I think it's really important to get physically active. Like for me, it really helps me with my productivity. Right now, like when I go to CrossFit, I go midday. So I like to work in the morning, go work out, then come back and I feel completely refreshed and I feel ready to, it's like taking on another new day. So I find that I'm able to get a lot more done and be a lot more productive by having these activities.
That's really cool. And the other thing I guess we, you know, didn't mention is you do this full time, right? So it is actually your full time job, which is amazing at 30.
Yeah, like I said, my office shut down when I was a computer engineer and I just decided to take the plunge. Entrepreneurship is something that I always wanted to do. I didn't think I would do it this early, but that looking back, when the office shut down, it was one of the dark periods. But looking back, it was one of the best things that could have happened to me because I'm enjoying every day. I love it.
Yeah. And you didn't go back to find another job. You really stuck with it. So
yeah. But with that being said, I think I should mention to people, I always recommend people when they're starting their real estate business, I definitely highly recommend people that they should keep their jobs. I know a lot of people ask me, they want to make the jump. Like I was kind of forced to because my office shut down, but it doesn't make things easy because it's hard to get mortgages. I'm very fortunate that my brother, he was able to get the mortgages. He was working, so he had the T4 income to qualify. But that's one thing definitely to consider. Anyone who's getting into real estate investing, it's much easier to get mortgages. You need that T4 income. So I recommend them to stick with their jobs. First, you have to try out real estate investing to see if that's for you. But then once it becomes successful, maybe you build it up until you reach a certain level that you're comfortable with in terms of the income. And then you make the jump later on. So just don't do it. Don't make any quick or rash decisions.
No, especially because it's a slow game.
Absolutely. It's exactly.
Next question. If you lost all your money and all your assets and you had nothing, let's just say...
Oh my God.
Let's just say, you know, like knock on wood, it doesn't happen. But... how would you start again?
Oh my. Well, I would definitely really need to question why I lost all that money and assets and whether I'm in the right business. I would definitely question that. But I don't know. Really, I need to plan. I would really need to look, analyze and think about would I need to update my system to ensure it never happened again if I was still in real estate? Or maybe I would need to change strategies. Or maybe the industry altogether. Maybe something crazy with real estate is happening. Although I don't think that because everyone needs shelter. But there would definitely need to be a lot of planning before starting again.
Yeah, sounds good. Any last words from you that you want to mention or anything we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. If anybody is interested in, if they want to learn about development or want to talk to me for anything, right, entrepreneurship or real estate investing, feel free to contact me through email. Or you can go onto my website, gatewaygroup.ca. I'm more than happy to help people try to achieve their goals in real estate.
On that note, a lot of people that are not necessarily in investing yet and in those networking groups, it is amazing that so many people are just wanting to help and being there for each other. It's not a competitive, you stole my deal, this and that. It's a lot of people just helping each other out. So I want to say you are one of those guys. And, you know, thank you for mentioning that. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I will see you, I'm sure, at a networking event.
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks, guys, for joining me today exploring the wonderful city of Hamilton with Charles Waugh. I hope that you've learned a lot about the city. And if you have any questions, please reach out to Charles. He'll be more than happy to help you. We are going to end today by just discussing one of my favorite podcasts that I probably listen to daily, and that is Bigger Pockets. So if you guys have not heard of Bigger Pockets or you haven't been on Bigger Pockets, it's this whole community of investors. If you have questions, you can ask different investors that are actually Canadian as well that can answer. There's podcasts that come out every single week. Definitely a great resource to check out. Till next time, see you guys and happy investing.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larby. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?